The next case of the morning is number 00-4004, the United States against Herbert Enge.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Your Honors, good morning. My name is Mark Byrd, and I represent the appellants in this case, Herbert Eng, Carol Eng, and the intervener appellant, Marston Moore Trust. I'll begin by briefly addressing the jurisdictional issue in the case, very briefly, and then move into the substantive argument, which addresses the judgment that was entered by the District Court. But first, with respect to the jurisdictional issue that was raised by the court in this matter, there does appear to have been some question as to what the district judge had in mind at the time that he entered his order. There were a couple of issues left open, but as was argued in the jurisdictional memorandum, and I know that counsel for the United States agrees, under the finality doctrine, this would be appropriate for the court to find jurisdiction in this case. Under the Forgay case, as well as the U.S. versus Davenport from this circuit, the uniqueness of the fact that this is a real property conveyance and the potential prejudice that could inure to the appellant Carol Eng, who is simply named in all of this because she is in the chain of title being a joint tenant, the potential prejudice to her that could inure if the court were not to accept jurisdiction warrants application of that doctrine, and we would urge the court to agree. On to the argument that is the substance of the case. It's our position, Your Honors, we're asking the court to vacate and remand that portion of the district court's finding that the conveyance of the beneficial interest by Herbert Eng, his beneficial interest into the Marston Moore Trust, his conveyance of this real property, was found to be fraudulent in fact by clear and convincing evidence. And we're asking the court to find that that was in fact clear error by the district court and to vacate and remand as such. With respect to this issue, essentially what we have, Your Honors, is a conveyance back in April of 1983 by Herbert and Carol Eng of beneficial interests that they held in their residence and the property that their residence is on, conveyed into an Illinois land trust for the benefit of their three daughters. What the district court found through application of the factors in the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act is that by clear and convincing evidence, the United States had demonstrated that at the time Mr. Eng made that conveyance, it was done with the actual intent to defraud the Internal Revenue Service. With respect to the facts in this case, I believe examination of it demonstrates that, in fact, it would have been clearly erroneous to reach that result, given the fact that there are numerous factors under the Fraudulent Transfer Act that militate the opposite way to demonstrate that this was nothing more than an innocuous conveyance that happens every day for individuals who wish to avoid probate by leaving their real property to their heirs through the creation of an Illinois land trust, and that that was what happened in this case. In order to examine whether or not there was an actual intent to defraud, it's necessary to examine Mr. Eng's liability for tax year 1982, because it's undisputed that at some point during the 1980s, Mr. Eng became the classic tax protester. By his own testimony and admission, he began to attend meetings, he began to adopt beliefs, and began to try to, at various points, insulate property from collectability by the IRS. And now, all of that notwithstanding, what we have here is in 1983, this particular conveyance, and what his actual intent was at that time. The district court found that for tax year 1982, which would have been due and payable in April of 1983, Mr. Eng owed a total of $40,000 in tax liability from his job as a pilot at American Airlines. The court also found, and there's no dispute, that there was $28,000 that had been properly withheld by American Airlines, leaving a deficit of approximately $12,000 that was due and owing in April at the time that this trust was created. On April 15th, just 4 days prior to Mr. Ang conveying his beneficial interest into this trust, he filed with the Internal Revenue Service an application for an extension of time until August of 1983 to prepare his return. And that's a point that I believe carries great weight in favor of the finding that this was not done with the intent to defraud the IRS, because a classic tax protester, an individual who has adopted wholeheartedly the beliefs of this tax movement, is not likely to be an individual who would file for an extension of time in order to prepare and file his return. And while I'll grant that that return was never filed, I believe that the mere application coming just 4 days prior to the transfer into this trust demonstrates that there was an intent on Mr. Ang's part to comply at that point with the tax laws and file for that extension. He explained it in his testimony as seeking the delay in order to try to ascertain the amount of loss that could be deducted because a storm had blown a tree over in his property in 1982, and apparently it was a very nice and expensive tree. Nevertheless, an individual who at that time had adopted the tax protester beliefs would have not filed, I believe, and I think that that should carry great weight as well. The fact that there was only $12,000 that was due and owing to the Internal Revenue Service should also be a factor that the court gives great weight to in determining that this was not conveyed with the intent to defraud. Because at that time, and it's undisputed in the record, Mr. Ang was earning a six-figure salary as a pilot at United Airlines. In addition to that, he had a pension that had accumulated in excess of $100,000. In addition to that, he also owned the property that's the subject of this particular case. And all of that goes to the issue under the Uniform Transfer Act of whether or not at the time of conveyance the individual retained sufficient assets to pay off his anticipated indebtedness. With respect to that, we're examining whether or not the creation of this trust was done with actual intent to defraud the IRS for a debt that, in the best case scenario for the government, was $12,000 versus an individual whose assets, net worth, and continued expectancy income as a pilot at American Airlines exceeded that amount by more than 20-fold. To that extent, Your Honors, it's our position that that was given insufficient weight by the court and certainly militates against the finding that by clear and convincing evidence, Mr. Ang was demonstrated to have that requisite intent to invalidate this transfer that was more than 17 years old at the time. In addition to that, there was payment to the IRS in 1987 that dates back to a tax case that was heard by Judge Shader that is in the record and briefed as well. Mr. Ang paid that. That was, I believe, in 1987, some 4 years after the conveyance of the subject that is the subject of this case. And again, I believe that that is something that goes very strongly toward the idea that he had not adopted this attitude, that he was not going to pay anything to the IRS, and that comes even after, 4 years after, the subject transfer in this case. Under the Fraudulent Conveyance Act, there are several issues that the court found to gravitate toward the United States position. However, looking at those, the transfer obligation being to an insider, I would argue that it is fair to say that at least three-quarters of the Illinois land trusts that are created with the intent of avoiding probate are created without consideration. They're created without being conveyed to an outsider. It's typical that you would leave it to an insider and you would transfer that interest to your heirs, which in this case occurred. It happens every day. It happened in the 80s. It happens today. And it happens most often by individuals who do not owe the IRS anything. It's a valid means of conveying property, and we respectfully urge Your Honors to find that the district court's finding that this was proven by clear and convincing evidence in light of these facts was in fact clearly erroneous. there are no questions, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Byrd. We'll hear now from Mr. Hutter.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This is an almost textbook example of a fraudulent conveyance, and the appellants have shown no error in the district court's judgment. This is a case that was decided on its facts, and as we point out in our brief, none of the facts found by the district court are disputed on appeal. The primary facts are, of course, the badges of fraud are that the transfer in question was made to family members, daughters. It was a family to father to daughter conveyance. The transfer was made for no legal consideration, and Mr. and Mrs. Ng retained complete possession and full use of the property after it was transferred. The daughters basically did not use the property. Those are, of course, the biggest, the most important factors in this case, and point strongly to a finding of a fraudulent conveyance. In addition, it's clear that the transfer was made to put the property out of reach of the creditors, in this case meaning the IRS, because the Ings had virtually no other creditor whatsoever. In the years immediately following the transfer, Mr. Ng stopped filing income tax entirely. He did not file in 92. He did not file through 1987. He began attending tax protester meetings. He began converting all of his paychecks to bullion and having bills paid through a barter association. He began placing all of his liquid assets out of the country and foreign investments away from the hands of the IRS as best he could. In 1982, as Judge Shader said in his opinion, Mr. Ng also filed a false Form W-4 stating that he was exempt from withholding. You may see that in a footnote we say that American Airlines did indeed withhold that year. Well, that's because the American Airlines refused to accept that W-4, but he still filed that form and was fined later on by the IRS for having filed a false W-4. He filed a petition in the tax court regarding his 1979 liability, asserting frivolous arguments, and in 1991, Mr. Ng was convicted of federal income tax evasion and sentenced to prison. All of these factors make it clear that at the time of the transfer of the Marston Moore property, Mr. Ng was implementing a plan to stop paying taxes and to put all of his assets out of the reach of the IRS. It's true that at the time of the transfer itself did not leave Mr. Ng him insolvent, and that it was not a transfer at the time of substantially all of his assets. But the district court correctly viewed this transfer in context and correctly found that it was part of an overall plan to put assets beyond the reach of the IRS. Illinois case law, and we cited cases in our brief, permits the court to look at an overall pattern of behavior in order to determine whether a conveyance was fraudulent and whether fraud can be inferred. Of course, there's rarely direct evidence of fraud, and in such a case, it's clearly appropriate to do so. Even without the finding of a plan, of a long-term plan, it can be found that fraud can be found because right at the time in 82 when this transfer was made, he then went on in that year not to file his return, and he accumulated a tax debt at that time. And he was discussing protester ideas and seeking advice from protester type of people, and so the ideas were percolating. As we said in our brief, it's highly unlikely that someone intelligent and educated is just going to decide overnight in 1983 to stop filing taxes and accept the whole tax protester philosophy in whole. He'd been thinking about this for some time, and it's clear that it was present in his mind at the time of the transfer. It's also true, the district court pointed out, he may well indeed have had some plan to provide for his family and avoid probate by this matter, but he also had creditors that he was looking to avoid, and it's an age-old maxim that taxpayers must be just before they are generous to their family, and therefore the district court correctly found that this was a fraudulent conveyance. If the court has no questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hutter.
Thank you.
Byrd?
There's no question it has to be an extremely difficult endeavor to determine someone's actual intent 17 years after the fact. However, evidence is often qualitative in terms of what it does demonstrate. And in this case, certainly there would be no question, had Herbert Eng alone conveyed his interest into this type of trust, that his intent could be deemed to have been motivated by trying to defraud the IRS. But we also have the conveyance of his wife, Carol, of her beneficial interest into this trust at a time, and it goes without dispute, where she has absolutely no liability to the IRS and was only named for purposes of her being a joint tenant and appearing in the chain of title. I believe that it demonstrates, with both of them doing this, that this was nothing more than a typical family trying to provide for their heirs by avoiding probate. And the fact that he owes this money 18 years later should not carry the day on this argument. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Byrd. Thanks to both counsel for their efforts this morning, and we will take the case under advisement.